listening is a expansive and, like curiosity, an open-ended thing. So it's being able to grapple with and cope with uncertainty and ambiguity and kind of just sit with it.
This is Choose to be Curious, a show all about curiosity. We talk about research and theory, but mostly it's conversations about how curiosity shows up in work and life. I'm your host, Lynn Borton. Welcome. Come, choose to be curious with us. It's often when we're at our grumpiest that we need to be heard the most. So says Haru Yamada, a self-described global nomad and sociolinguist who loves thinking and writing about how people talk and listen across cultures. Listening comes up a lot in these curiosity conversations. When I came across Haru's new book, Kiku, The Japanese Art of Good Listening, I hoped I was onto something. I was not disappointed. This happens to be my 300th episode, and especially given the world we're in right now, spending a little time focused on how we might listen to one another better seemed like a mighty fine way to mark that milestone. Kiku is a Japanese word for listen. It's comprised of smaller characters together, as Haru puts it, generate the secret alchemy of listening. An ear on the left and 14 hearts on the right, conjuring a person listening with the energy of 14 hearts. Think for a moment what it means to listen with the energy of 14 hearts. Imagine what that makes possible. Haru makes a case for leaning into the cultural values that encourage tolerance, empathy, flexibility, and curiosity that are the foundations of good listening and ultimately our capacity for social harmony. In her epilogue, she tells the story of an elderly neighbor, Millie, who did not welcome what she viewed as the intrusion of foreign newcomers. Only when Millie dies does Haru have an opportunity to learn more about the aggrieved, lonely person who lived just down the street. That story had such resonance for me at a time when I think most of us are struggling with feeling not heard, just when we need to be heard the most. In parsing the many and marvelous ways we can bring those 14 hearts forward, Haru offers us, I think, a way back from our collective grumpiness, if only we're curious about how we might listen and what we might hear. I am delighted to have London-based sociolinguist and author Haru Yamada join me today. So welcome, Haru.
So happy to be here, Lynn. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. And, you know, you wrote somewhere, I don't remember where I saw this, that you hoped people would enjoy the book and do what you called delight in the experience of becoming reattuned to their expansive practice of listening. And I thought, I don't know that we often think of ourselves as expansive in our listening. And I loved that invitation.
I think so. I, in a way, the book is not really telling us anything we don't already know or have. And I think the have part is really interesting because we have listening at our disposal and maybe we don't use it enough. Maybe we don't use it to the extent that we can. And so the book is really about sort of reminding ourselves that we have all these, this capacity to listen, and we listen in a lot of different ways through a lot of different channels. And it's really kind of trying to refamiliarize ourselves with the way we listen.
Yeah, yeah. Before we started recording, you said, oh, you know, listening is what people think it is. And I was like, yes, and it's what we think it is, but it's also the things that we're not thinking about that we could be thinking about. And I think that's the magic of the book. So can we real quickly just run through what those 14 hearts are?
I want to say that Kiku in Japanese means listen, just simply. However, we have two characters for exactly the same words that's pronounced Kiku and Kiku, but they're two different characters. And one is written as a character, like you said, with an ear on the left and 14 hearts on the right. And I call that listening with 14 hearts. And the other one is written as a pair of gates and an ear in the middle. And to me, it conjures up someone trying to listen in for information on the inside. And I think that's the way we normally think about listening. Yeah. Or we typically think of listening as listening for information. So we listen for language. And the other one, the listening for 14 hearts, to me, is listening to the person. And we do that, and we have both those channels on all the time. But sometimes we have one on more powerfully than the other one. Mm-hmm. The 14 hearts is everything from listening to somebody's voice, like their physical voice. It's what helps us identify somebody. Oh, you know, somebody calls you and say, hi. And, you know, oh, you say, oh, hi, Dad. You can immediately, just by their voice, recognize who they are. That is a superpower. That's amazing that we can do that. So everything from the physical to the metaphorical. So we think about the worlds that we create through our listening, because listening isn't just listening to something. We have to go back into our memories. And in a lot of ways, listening for language works this way, is that we recall something we've heard before and we kind of listen for it. And the old English word, the old Saxon word, listen, I think it's pronounced, carries this meaning that we listen for something and we're looking for something to hear, and then we hear it. Mm-hmm. So that's one kind of listening. We have so many other kinds of listening. We have the listening we use when we're listening to lectures. We have listening we use when we're listening to political debates. We have listening we use for presentations at work. We also have the maybe not so kind of good listening that we think we're doing when we're listening, although I can argue that it might not be the listening we're looking for too much. But when we're being scolded, for example, we say, listen. We have so many modes of listening. And while we're doing all of that, we're listening for someone's identity, somebody's cultural background, their generation, how they're regulating their emotions, how they're using their social skills. So many things that we're listening for. So those are the many channels that we use. And I'm sure your listeners can rattle off many more than the 14 even.
Well, what I appreciated about it was this opportunity to really sink into the idea that listening is about content and context, and that we do it, as you put it, that it's sort of practiced in surround sound, right? It's yeah. never just about the words. So you have this lovely expression about listening competency. And I think, you know, everybody listens. So we all think, oh, well, I know how to listen. But actually, maybe we could get better at it. It's like it's sort of a skill, right?
Well, listening is maybe another way of saying learning. So maybe this is how it connects to curiosity as well. So when children learn a language, children are born being able to learn any language. And over time, they learn that it's most effective to learn the language around them. So then, in a sense, it's a kind of de-learning all the possibility of the whole possibility of other languages they could have learned. And they learn to listen to, say, English. And so in listening to that one language, they're using one kind of learning skill, which is listening to language. But they have learned that through listening to the voice of their carers, which is probably their mother at first. So they've been listening to their mother from before they were born in utero. So they've been listening to her voice, physical voice, but also the way she says things. So as in, it's not just in the words, but also the context as well. So we have the idea that listening is listening to information, and it's in the content, it's in the language, it's in the event of what's unfolding in front of us. And we take for granted the idea that there's everything around the language, so the context in the environment, which includes us as people, so the speaker as well as the listeners. And we have to manage that both as listeners. That's right. So that's quite a task for us.
It is. It is. And I'm curious, as you drilled into this, because of course you're coming to this with this academic expertise, but also this lived experience of having lived in a bunch of different cultures and language cultures. that I can only imagine has illuminated your scholarship in some pretty important and exciting ways. And I'm wondering, for you, what was the juiciest thing that's come out of your study of good listening?
So I've always thought of listening, I think pretty much as we all think of listening, as kind of a communication thing. It's also a relationship, should I say, channel. It's a relationship skill as well. So as we listen for information about things, the content we talk about, we also listen for information about the people in the conversation. And I think for me, the most interesting thing is that part, is that we often get so absorbed in what we're listening to, the conversation, the topic itself, that we tend to forget that about the people in the conversation. And that is, I think, an important element of why our conversations go awry and there's misunderstanding, is because we haven't taken into consideration the larger context of the conversation. And just knowing that there is sort of content and the people in the conversation can make for a deterring sort of conflict before it happens. So if we know that there is a topic of conversation and we're listening and we understand the words that are being said and the argument, we may disagree with the argument and still be able to offer our compassion and our respect to the person who's speaking, even though we disagree with what they're saying. So if we come at a conversation knowing those things rather than just, oh, I disagree with you, your comments, and therefore you're a bad person, I think it makes for a more healthy conversation.
Well, this is where I think that curiosity comes up so much in this listening context. And it gets talked about a lot here from all kinds of directions, but sort of being a little curious about, like, well, what am I maybe missing here? You know, I feel like I'm reacting to something, I'm disagreeing, but maybe there's some context, maybe there's some additional meaning around this that I'm not appreciating. And you have some nice discussion about the role of, or the concept of, weak and loose ties in the ways that we understand in those conversations and listening. You know, in the current context, you have this wonderful line about lying, like truth telling, really does take shape in the ears of the beholder. Mm. Can you talk a little bit about how that works, or why that works or doesn't work for us as listeners?
So recently I've become really interested in the studies of listening to music and what that can offer us as information about just listening in general.
Yeah.
And I think what was really interesting to me was that these music studies have discovered, in studying about what gives us pleasure in listening to music, and they discovered that we like predictability. We love being able to predict things because we love being right, I think. But also found that we also love being surprised.
You're listening to Choose to Be Curious. I'm your host, Lynn Borton, and I'm joined today by sociolinguist Haru Yamada. We're talking about listening with the energy of 14 hearts.
And I think this is where curiosity comes in, because we love it also when a comedian takes us down a story and we're following it. And yeah, we've experienced that. We know about that story. And then suddenly it takes a turn and it goes somewhere else. And then we're surprised by it and we laugh. So I like the way it relates to listening, and perhaps it relates to curiosity in this way too, that we need both ends. We can't have too much of one or the other, because if you have too much predictability, then it becomes a bit boring. If you have too much surprise, then it becomes a bit chaotic. You don't know what's going on. So we need somewhere in the middle. And I think everyone's sweet spot, if you will, is, you know, the point, their pleasure point is slightly different for each person. Yeah. And maybe as aggregates, it's very different across cultures as well. So I think the secret lies in kind of finding that middle ground between, you know, what familiarity and also the surprise. And curiosity maybe leans a little bit more heavily towards the surprise. Also, because it can create chaos, I think it also, if it doesn't go quite right, it can create fear as well. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why we we don't do it. We walk away from the things we're curious about. We think, oh, maybe curiosity will kill the cat.
So speaking of humor and fear, it reminds me, you quote Alan Alda about allowing ourselves to be changed by listening. And I think in the book, you sort of postulate that maybe we don't do that because we're afraid. I mean, why do you think we're afraid of listening's power, it sounds like?
I think so. I mean, there's always the possibility that we think we might hear something we don't want to hear or learn something we don't want to know. Listening is a expansive, and like curiosity, an open-ended thing. So it's being able to grapple with and cope with uncertainty and ambiguity and kind of just sit with it.
Yeah. Are there other kinds of cultural expressions between English and Japanese that you've surfaced in this that have spoken to you about the way the culture and the language echo one another?
Yes. In my work listening chapter, I talk about a listening loop.
And, yes.
And in it is the listening loop at work, which is, it starts with mutual respect. And mutual respect gives rise to trust. And trust gives rise to more innovation and motivation for employees to stay in the company. Then the recognition and what I call demonstrated listening. And I think this is the part that you're talking about. Recognition, I think the most common one we know about is getting paid for our work. But I think there are many, many studies that show that beyond a certain point, of course, it's very nice to be recognized for the work we do and being financially rewarded for that. But beyond that, I think many people in studies who have replied and said that we want things other than financial recognition, and that's sort of mentoring and awards and recognition within the company. And then there is a kind of thing that goes on every day in kind of Japanese, not just companies, but everyday work and everyday effort, I want to say, which is demonstrated listening. So it's the little things that people say to each other to say, hey, you know, I know you've worked really hard today. Thanks for coming to work and putting in your work. It's just something that you say at the end of the day. As I was writing this book, my dad passed away, and I wasn't ready to talk about the things he talked about then, but I am kind of now, because while he was going kind of in and out of consciousness, he would remember, like a good Japanese salaryman, he would remember his work, and he would talk about his work a lot, his work and his sports days at his university. So those are the two things he talked about. And as he was talking about his work, he would say the little things that kind of like things to remember for me kind of things. And one of the things he said is, you know, never forget to say otsukaresama deshita at the end of the day. And otsukaresama deshita is a really hard word to translate, but literally it means like you must be tired is really kind of what it means. Uh-huh. Culturally, it means way more than that. It means kind of, it's like a combination of well done, thank you for coming to work, appreciate you putting in your hours. But everybody just says it. It's kind of like a standard expression, the way we would say bye, see you tomorrow kind of thing. But I think it kind of boosts people's morale up to kind of the end of the day. You know, they've put in their 8 or more hours at work and you say, otsukaresama deshita. So it's just a kind of demonstrated listening that says, I've seen you, I've heard you working all day. And this is just what I'm going to say to note that you have done all this, put in all this effort.
Yeah, I love that. It's sort of, I see you, I appreciate you. That's lovely. So that's a lovely listening practice. I like to collect what I call curiosity practices, ways people bring curiosity into their lives, large and small. And I'm wondering if you have listening curiosity practices.
Okay, this is a really hard one because I'm going to try and enter this through the listening door and not the speaking door, which is more common to do. I think the first thing to do is to decide whether you're going to listen or not. That's really the first step of listening, because you hear things and then you've heard them, but you have to decide whether you're going to listen to them or not. So say you decide to listen to it, then I think at that point, what the first step you have to take is to decide to enter the listening space of the other person. You've made that decision, and that means that you've turned on your listening channel to listen to the other person and kind of appreciate everything that they are going to say or express. So not all of it is verbal, so verbally and non-verbally. And then you can maybe turn on your language channel, which is maybe we do this the other way around. You know, we listen to what people say first, and then either don't turn on the listening to the person channel too much, or have it way down on our mixer board. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to turn it on hard first, and then turn on the language channel, because the language channel, I think we're so programmed in our daily kind of productivity aims and all of that to turn on hard. So it's going to come on. So then we can turn it on. It's almost automatic. And then I think the last thing to do is we have to decide whether we're going to stay in the conversation or not. So then we have to adjust and align ourselves to the channels that the other person is using. This is very difficult, as we all know. And we're juggling ourselves and the other person, listening to the other person in the conversation. So it's all about adaptation to the other person. And it might not be perfect, but we all know what a good conversation is. We come out of those conversations feeling really good. And we may not even have talked a lot about anything substantive. It's those conversations. I remember in my younger days, my parents always used to ask me, "What were you talking about for so long?" And then you say, "Oh, nothing." And you know that it was everything but nothing. You were talking about a lot of things, because this is your bestie, and you were telling them, you know, you're revealing your soul to them. So, but in that process, we are doing a lot of adjusting, and then going back to sort of the close ties and the loose ties we were talking about earlier, I think we offer a lot of leeway for people we do know. You know, we can say a lot of things without expressing ourselves, and we don't have to use that very restricted code of language that we do use for people we know less well. So I think it's really incumbent on us to really turn on hard the person one, where we're talking to people we don't know as well, because it does require more effort than the other one where we're talking to people we know. So those are kind of the three steps of stepping into somebody else's space, and turning on the language channel second rather than the person channel, and then adjusting as we go along.
I love it. Even starting with deciding that you're going to listen seems huge, right? I mean, just wow, how different our days would be if we all went into them deciding we were going to listen. That's pretty fabulous. I love that. Before I let you go, are you game for my big jar of wannabe analogies?
I don't have to be, so I'm going to be, you know.
All right, that's fair.
I am a little bit curious, though. So.
Oh, good. Okay, so here it is, actual jar.
Oh, no.
I've got slips of paper in here. Yep, one for you, one for me, one for our audience.
Oh, I see.
And we're going to make an analogy to curiosity with whatever is on here. Okay. Yours is a puppy's chew toy. How is curiosity like a chew toy? Mine is break dancing. And here, I've got one for the listeners as well. So do you want to go first, or do you want me to give it a shot first?
I think I'm going to have to think of mine first, so you
okay.
go first.
Okay. Break dancing to me is like marvelous and mind-boggling, and maybe that's where I'll start. But also, it's very free. It looks free form, but takes a lot of practice. And I guess that's a lot like curiosity, where it looks on the outside like, oh, la-di-da, but actually in all the ways that we've been talking about, it takes real skill and a decision that this is something that you're going to get good at. I'll say that's how curiosity is like breakdancing. How is curiosity like a puppy's chew toy?
I think curiosity is like a puppy's chew toy, because curiosity can be feel physical in the beginning. Maybe the trigger is physical. But then it has so many, so much more kind of an expansive delivery. Once the puppy starts chewing on it, it's kind of, you know, one thing leads to another. Maybe he'll, you know, that chewing will end up in the human throwing the ball. It could lead to so many other things, and so it's. I think curiosity is really about opening our eyes and opening our ears and opening all our senses to everything. So the start can be physical, but there's so much more beyond that.
Well, it reminds me of what you say about listening, right? That it actually uses all of our senses. It's not just an auditory thing when we listen. I like that.
That's right.
And listeners, yours is the huffing sound a cat or dog makes. Now, I tell you, I do not write these things. These come from audience members. So how is the huffing sound that a cat or dog makes like curiosity? Let me know. Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky Analogy. Well, Haru, thank you so much for this. And thank you for this lens into my listening each day. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed that. Thank you, Lynn.
You've been listening to Choose to be Curious. I'm your host, Lynn Borton. Thank you for joining us here today. You can find all my 300 episodes on my website at choosetobecurious.com. I hope you'll follow me here, there, and on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky, all at Choose to be Curious, where you can share your the huffing sound a cat or dog makes analogy, hashtag analogy. Many thanks to my lovely guest, Haru Yamada. Links to Kiku, the Japanese art of good listening, and Haru's other work on my website. A shout out and thanks to Jeff Wetzler of the Ask Approach for putting Haru on my radar. Thanks too to Sean Ballack for our theme music. And this is Waré by Cloud Harbor via Blue Dot Sessions. I hope you'll join us again next time. Until then, choose to be curious.
When you were talking about Millie, actually, you know, she obviously needed to be heard, and I had realized that she had gotten all these boxes of shoes, I discovered, because she wanted to hear the call agent. She wanted her to listen to her. I think she talked to her for like an hour or something every time she called. I really thought about then that, you know, we all want to be heard. And is it really the same thing for wanting to the right to speak? So we have the right to be heard, and is it the same thing as the right to speak?